my beautiful people, and welcome back. This is season 3, episode 3 of the Secrets of a Conflict Coach podcast. And as always, I'm Hannah, your host and your conflict coach. Welcome, welcome, welcome back for episode 3 of this new and improved third season. Thank you so much for spending another week with us. I've got another special guest today, local marketing expert, wordsmith and writer, one of the smartest and wittiest people I know, my dear friend Tucker Partridge. Tucker, say hello to the beautiful people.
Hello, beautiful people.
I'm so excited. Let's talk about stuff.
Yeah, let's talk about stuff. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course.
It's wonderful to be here.
You are, like I said, probably one of the most clever and witty people that I know. You use words so well, even just like in normal everyday life, but you also use words well professionally. You're a copywriter, marketer. Talk a little bit about what you do every day.
Yeah, so I got my start in marketing in a non-traditional pathway. I was an English major. I think that came from just an interest in words, like telling stories and getting to that deeper meaning.
Yeah.
And so out of college, I just happened to get a role in marketing and figured out that that's storytelling just at scale.
Yeah.
To break down what I do in a day, a lot of it's content creation that typically involves writing, web content, things like that to help promote businesses to new audiences. A lot of the way that search engines work is based on writing. So it helps to have a writing skill and to have, I guess, that inclination to choose your words carefully and make sure that every word is the right one.
Yeah, no, that is so important. And I mean, that's why you do what you do. A lot of people have to hire someone to do that because there's a lot of thought and intention that has to go into that.
I also don't want to sell the career too big in that a lot of people don't want to do this, and for good reason. There is, I understand, a certain level of boredom that could come from looking at just lists of words and figuring out what words are we targeting for this campaign. I understand that is kind of a niche interest to have, but it's one that I've really taken to.
I think we need people like you who like to do it. You know? It's like you said, a lot of people don't like to do it. Yeah. And you're good at it, which definitely helps. How have you seen the language that people use or the language people want to use impact the success of the business one way or the other?
I think it really mirrors the way that words work in conversation and in relationships that we have in day-to-day life. In my experience, however limited, I've been doing this about 10 years, I've found that authenticity is what most businesses are trying to project.
Yeah.
I think that consumers are pretty beset by ads all the time. They've gotten smart and have figured out, you know, what is an ad?
Yeah.
What am I being sold? So the way to differentiate yourself is to be authentic. And so a lot of that, when I'm approaching work with clients, I typically try to say, like, how do you speak?
Right.
What is the voice that you want this business to have? What is the ideal goal?
Right.
And that really informs that choice of word that you end up picking. But I think that that really matters because you're speaking to an audience. When you're speaking to an audience, you need to consider what their experience is like and what kind of words are going to resonate with them. There's a million different ways to do marketing, but in my experience, that authenticity has always worked because people resonate with people.
Right. I like that you said it kind of mirrors conversation and relationships. I mean, we are in a society now who can easily detect lies and manipulation and rejects that, which is great.
Everybody has a great BS filter.
Yes, absolutely. And that's definitely progress that we're making, especially in the age of the internet and all the information we have access to. It's important to be able to detect what's real and what's not. And so it makes sense that instead of there being specific fads, you know, they used to say sex sells. And while that may still be true on some level, I think now we're to the point where there aren't specific things that sell.
It's inauthentic.
Yeah.
Like when Hardee's used to have those commercials that featured scantily clad women yes. eating their burgers.
Right.
It was like, I think the consumers have kind of elevated themselves yeah. a little bit. And like,
we'd like okay, to think so.
We get it, you know? Yeah. And they've had to completely redo the way that they do marketing.
Right.
I think that there are those base human instincts, I guess, that at the end of the day are going to sell. But I think for the most part, it's about pitching an authentic emotion,
right.
making someone feel a certain way.
Usually a certain way that they've felt before, a right. way they can immediately resonate with.
Something that's readily able to be recalled, an experience, right. a feeling, that kind of thing. And I think words have this really powerful way to cause those emotions. I mean,
right.
when you're reading a book or watching a movie that was at one point a screenplay.
Yeah, like, right.
You can be stirred to emotions just from the way that words are chosen. So
absolutely.
Obviously, you know, you have to think of it that importantly. Like, every word needs to have a meaning.
I agree. And I coach that a lot of times. I mean, not on the marketing side, but on the human side, on the relationship side. Conflicts are escalated because people aren't choosing their words carefully. And when you're in a really heightened emotional state, I've said before on this podcast several times, I think, when your emotions kick in, your logic shuts down. And that makes sense to people because they've felt that before.
Mm-hmm.
It's a self-preservation. That's because your body is trying to protect you, your brain's trying to protect you. It's bringing those emotions forward, so it's really easy for you to recognize how you feel. But a lot of times, instead of recognizing how we feel, we project that then back onto the conflict at hand. And words, like you said, have the power to evoke strong emotion. And I coach people all the time about how important it is to choose your words carefully and be intentional with what you say. And it seems like you work with that every day, kind of on a different side of that. But what about the cultural side, like the actual social side? How do you think language and words can promote a sort of understanding and growth among diverse people?
I think language is a huge part of that, namely because language is a tool.
Yeah.
It can be used for good or it can be used for bad. And historically, a lot of times it has been used for bad.
Right.
A lot of times, my first thought when I see a bad campaign is, how did this get approved?
Right.
Like,
right.
How did this get through multiple sets of eyes? If you're trying to speak to a more diverse audience or build a more inclusive brand of messaging,
yeah.
I think that considering the experience and life of everybody, every set of eyes that's reading that matters.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm a straight white man, so I have one experience that's completely different from a lot of other people.
Right.
And so if I write something up as part of a campaign or just a social media post,
yeah,
there are things that I'm not considering that other people would consider.
Right.
And I think that part of building a more diverse world and a more inclusive one, one that I think a lot of us would like to see, is by opening up those eyes and like being willing to do the work and learn
yeah.
and understand the harmful origins of some of the terms that we use every day. You have to really consider the audience that you're speaking to, and the way that you do that is by speaking to them.
Right.
You know, finding out
right.
what needs are not being met, what pain points arise. That's one of the first things I advise any of the people that come in looking for marketing assistance from me on is, are you speaking to your customer base?
Right.
Like, do you know what they want to hear? Are
right.
you speaking to what issues they have?
Right. Okay. As you're talking, I'm like applying this to the way I coach people, because a lot of people are in a new environment for the first time, especially people coming to college or people who are marrying into a family with different backgrounds, or maybe someone is living with a roommate with a completely different background. There are a lot of situations like that, and it's just really hard to have that understanding, and it's really frustrating for everyone involved. And really, the thing that bridges that gap best is communication.
Mm-hmm.
Asking the questions that might feel a little uncomfortable in a space where everyone understands that it's not supposed to be bad.
You have to be willing to engage with the discomfort.
Yeah.
You have to be willing to
absolutely
put yourself in a position where you can be wrong
yeah.
and you can learn. You know, that's how we get better.
Right. I think a lot of people, when they feel like they're getting corrected or when they hear something that changes or should change the way they act or behave, they get a little bit defensive because they feel like they've been doing everything wrong and they have to just be this new person now or do this whole new thing now. And my take, my personal opinion, is that we're just always trying to get better. I don't think we can ever be perfect at anything. And I think that
Probably should be not
the general understanding.
And, you know, I've say this as someone who has gotten defensive in the past,
right,
angered or
same.
Like, you know, I think that's a very natural emotion to feel.
Absolutely.
I think it's just that, and this is such basic advice.
Yeah.
But I guess it's cliche for a reason. Like, to prevent a lot of conflict, you literally have to put yourself in the other person's shoes. We are what our experiences are.
Yeah.
And so if I don't have the same experience as someone, maybe I don't understand exactly where they're coming from, but I bet they'll be willing to tell me.
Right.
And I mean, that's what attracted me to writing in the first place, is being able to kind of communicate those stories, to be able to tell, you know, this is what happened to me. The specifics don't apply to your situation, right, but maybe there's a universal takeaway.
Right.
Or some lesson that we can all learn in the process.
And I think a lot of people get told, you know, put yourself in their shoes, have empathy, but then no one's being told how to do that.
Right.
How is someone supposed to understand if there's no way to understand that? And I think you're right. The answer is communication. It's talking. It's asking the hard questions and being willing to sit in discomfort.
It takes humility.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, a lot of us are very prideful. We don't want to give up that level of control. But I think that kind of meshing together is what leads to more unified and at least some kind of understanding.
Like, right.
I don't know how you can solve a conflict or sell a marketing campaign or anything without having like a shared understanding of reality.
Yeah.
So let's reach like a consensus reality and then we'll go.
When I was studying conflict resolution, one of the first things they taught us is how to lead someone to middle ground. And that's not an easy thing to do. It's not an easy thing to do yourself, like to find middle ground. And it's equally hard for a neutral third party to lead someone to a middle ground. But that is the first step to being able to manage a conflict well, is having some shared space, some shared reality that puts you on a level playing field. In those situations, when we are having these difficult or uncomfortable conversations and you're trying to find middle ground and there's conflict there, is where it's important to be mindful of your words and your language.
Yeah, you'll probably hear this in any therapist that you go see, is I statements and you statements.
Yes.
One of the things in conflict that I've had to learn in relationships and friendships, anything, is it's not a contest. There's some sort of communication breakdown.
Yeah.
And if I can choose my words and really be selective to make sure that I'm only indicating how I feel, you know, then maybe I'm conveying that better.
Yeah.
Instead of, you made me so mad, it's, I feel angry because of this.
Right.
I just think it helps diffuse that kind of initial confrontation instinct.
Right.
Because then you're not thinking about the other person, and especially not as somebody that you're doing combat with.
Right.
But you're immediately redirecting to, how am I feeling right now? You're diagnosing the feeling that maybe the other person did cause you. But a lot of that conflict can also be internal.
Yeah.
So it's like you're giving yourself a second to like, okay, I feel this way.
Yeah.
And you're voicing that.
Right. My clients and I talk a lot about loaded language.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is I and you statements, making sure you're talking about how you're feeling, not blaming someone else or talking about what they did. Their actions made you feel a certain way, or the situation made you feel a certain way. And that's reducing fault and blame, which is the least important part of any given conflict. And people don't get that. And
it doesn't matter.
Right. It doesn't matter whose fault it is. Do you want to get through it or not? Let's figure out how to get through it. If the answer is no, I don't want to get through it, that's a whole different thing. But yes, we talk about loaded language, you versus I statements. Also, getting rid of absolutes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you always, you never, or I always, I never.
Because that sets such unbelievably high stakes for the conflict or communication.
So little of relationships are absolute.
Right.
Everything fluctuates.
We're all living in that gray space. It's not black or white,
right,
absolute,
And if you can start using I statements and remove absolutes and remove curse words, you can use curse words all you want in your day-to-day life to express yourself. But if you're in a conflict with someone you care about, cursing at them or towards them is going to trigger them and make them defensive.
It escalates.
Curse words are, at their core, emotional words. That's why we use them, to express that high level of emotion. And so if you're using them in conflict, I get it. It does help you get that emotional surge out. But the person you're using them towards is going to feel attacked by them. That's 100% of the time going to happen. There's not a way to turn that around.
Right.
So it's going to heighten the emotion of the situation, which creates defensiveness. That's a little bit of a hot take for some people, but you can use them all you want as long as it's not in conflict towards somebody you care about, because that destroys relationships.
For me, I've always viewed it like, let's be adults. Right. Like, you know, like
teenager, we know other words.
Yeah, I've purported to have some schooling.
Yeah, so right.
I'm capable of using other words. I just think that in terms of having a constructive discussion, which in working relationships and friendships, typically you want it to be constructive.
Right, yeah.
I just think that that adds a charge to things that isn't helpful. And one thing in a lot of the writing that I'm trying to do is trim the fat, get rid of stuff that isn't necessary.
Right. Making it as easy for people to understand as possible.
Right. As digestible as possible.
Right, exactly.
Curse words are just kind of like that filler word.
Yeah.
Now, it's not a filler word because it is attention grabbing,
right.
But yeah. In an ad campaign, sure, you know, that's going to get attention at least. But in terms of having conflict, I see that as a word that can be edited out.
Right. You know? Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, you might think it. Yeah, you might feel that emotion that comes with it. But you don't have to publish everything you write.
Right. Exactly. And that's one reason a lot of therapists and coaches will recommend that people write things down before they have conversations about it. That's another thing I have to work with people on, is the difference between pausing and giving the silent treatment.
Right.
Just like ignoring your partner or your friend or whoever it is that you're having conflict with, just ignoring them and not talking to them until you're ready is not cool. But if you need to walk away, let them know, I'm not ready to talk about this right now, and I want it to be a constructive conversation. So I'm going to need some time to get my thoughts together. I don't want to hurt you.
No.
It's okay to say those words.
Internal editor is away at the moment.
Exactly.
I need a minute.
Exactly. Like, if we talk about this right now, I'm going to be emotionally charged, and I would rather have this conversation when I'm not. Or when I'm less emotionally charged. You don't have to be completely emotion-free about it in order to have a conversation about it. But yes, so we've talked about words and language, but I do want to take a second and talk about nonverbal communication, which is anything from facial expressions and hand gestures to body language to like subtext, things that aren't being said. So I know I have experience with this, obviously, as humans. It's not an easy thing to grasp, especially for people who are neurodivergent. So I want to talk about how you've seen that play out, just because you work directly with cause and effect, product and result. So let's talk about what you've seen.
Yeah, so a super important thing that I'm not sure gets enough consideration is subtext.
Yeah.
What's not said in the ad copy. Yes, you're speaking to an audience, but what are you saying without the words? I think one of the most marquee examples of like a bad ad campaign was the Kendall Jenner Pepsi ad.
Yeah, I remember that.
There was no copy on the screen that you could read, but it was what it was saying in the subtext. And the subtext there is, oh, Pepsi needs to have an opinion on this, which ultimately was nothing. And I think that's why people got mad, is they're like, do we really need to hear from Pepsi on this?
Yeah.
You know, in those unsaid things, messages are conveyed.
Mm-hmm.
This works in conflict, too. You may say something in the heat of an argument. I always take out the trash.
Yeah.
Well, what are you implying by that?
Right.
You're implying that the other person doesn't, and maybe
never
you're
will.
Implying that they're lazy.
Yeah.
Well, then you're immediately priming that conflict with upsetting the other person because all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, hold on.
Because then they get defensive and they go, well, I literally just took out the trash last week. There's always that thing about someone says something and someone else goes, oh, so you're saying blah, 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 blah.
Right.
And that person goes, I didn't say that. And it's like, did you though?
How are your words structured? How are your words chosen?
Right.
To where that could be conveyed.
Yeah.
Because if you're leaving that kind of ambiguity in your language, if your words can be taken that wildly in a different way than you were anticipating, maybe you need to use more precise words.
Right. As humans with relationships out in the world that we care about, it's our responsibility to speak with intention and be mindful of our words and our language, because we can't assume that everyone's going to take what we say exactly how we mean it. It's our responsibility to take into consideration the fact that there could be miscommunication. But it's also equally the listener's responsibility to take into consideration that what they perceived might not be what was meant.
Right.
That's why it's a transaction. It's a two-way street. And there are so many models of communication that just get more and more intricate, and I'm not going to get into all of that. But it does show that there's so much more to a communication than just what is said.
Right.
That's literally just one little piece of a multifaceted concept that is the way we interact with each other. And it's our responsibility to be mindful of how we're interacting.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest learning moments for me was in the marketing field, getting access to the analytics behind a lot of the technology that we use. Seeing all of those numbers, I promise I'm going somewhere with this. Seeing all those numbers is great, but the volume of data that we're inundated with constantly, we kind of forget that behind each one of those data points is a person.
Right.
And so one of the things that I've tried to emphasize in all of my marketing efforts, and I think can apply to just relationships with people, is think of them as people.
Yeah.
I'm not speaking to this faceless void of numbers. It's a person on the other side. It's a person who has lived experiences, a person who is contending with their own material conditions.
Yeah. Like,
that's what's beautiful about humanity, right, is how complex and individual each person is, but how we build those connections is by recognizing that there's humanity in me, I'm a person, there's right. humanity in you, you're a person.
Right.
There's a trend I see on social media, and I think it's kind of tongue-in-cheek, but it's something that kind of irks me, so I'm going to talk about it. The idea of calling people in conflict like an NPC, you're like not-player character, you're not the main character of this story.
Right.
I think that that view, or looking at other people that way, can lead to so much conflict
right.
and so much unnecessary friction, because...
Yeah.
At the end of the day, we're all just people.
Right.
Putting people first, thinking about who you're speaking to and how you're speaking to them, I think that all matters tremendously.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I would say so too. There have been times where someone has really, really bothered me. I've just been like, these are not my people. I'm just not vibing. Don't love it. Don't want to spend time with them because of the way they've interacted with me in the past, which... In my head, I'm like, it takes a lot to offend me. Like, it's got to be really bad because I feel offended about it. And, you know, that's all emotion. And then I've learned about things that they've went through or things that they've done for other people or just things that give me more insight into who they are as a person. And it immediately shocks me back into this is a person with an entire life full of experiences who acts, behaves, and perceives based on their reality. Not mine.
Yeah, they didn't live life as me, so I can't expect them to understand the way I'm viewing things.
Exactly, and that doesn't make me right and them wrong, and it doesn't make them right and me wrong. That's not what it's about. I mean, we've heard everyone's fighting a battle you know nothing about and stuff like that, and that is true. I think when we see things so many times, things that have gone viral like that, it kind of devalues it a little bit, but...
You can still get frustrated when somebody cuts you off in traffic, but for me personally, I've found my life a lot more enjoyable just being like, maybe they were driving to the hospital to deliver a baby.
Yeah.
Or they just got a promotion and were on their way to tell their wife, or whatever the circumstance is.
Someone told me one time that anytime someone cuts them off or does something stupid or reckless in traffic, they just assume that they really have to poop. And they empathize with them immediately because they're like,
there.
You know what? You know what? I wouldn't want to do that in my car either.
No.
Okay, y'all heard it here first. Well, not first, but y'all heard it here today. treat people like people.
Crazy.
Crazy concept. If you listened to last week's episode, you heard me talk to Dr. Bree. And Bree, Tucker, and I, and my husband Gage, all live together in the same dorm our freshman year of college, and that's how we all met. We've all just got to watch each other grow and kind of come into our own as people and as entrepreneurs and kind of starting our own things. So that said, I promise I'm not gonna only have guests on from Hot Tall class of 2014, I guess. But it's not my fault that y'all are doing really cool things, so.
I will be posting more about what's to come on my social media, so feel free to look me up. You can find me on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, you name it, at Your Conflict Coach with two H's. And in the meantime, if you have any questions or comments, you can also reach out through my website, which you can find through my social media. As always, I'm Hannah Hutchinson, your host and your conflict coach, and I hope you beautiful people have a beautiful rest of your week.
And I'll see you next week with a whole new guest. Bye.